Your program feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder, we have a Bible Institute here at BBN. At bbnradio.org, just click Bible Institute.
Hey, how's that home building project going? Let BBN help you as you build a strong family to the glory of God. Welcome to Building Blocks for the Family. Our guest today is Joe Castaneda. And when you think about the future, do you first look at the past? Those who have traveled this road before and have made it easier for us to follow now. Think with us about running the race of life faithfully as you think about your future. Here's Joe Castaneda and Psalm 139.
We're going to start in Hebrews 12 and then we'll jump to Psalm 139. Last night, you know, we kicked this off talking about this idea that we are surrounded by people who have carried this legacy of faith before us, both in the past, in the scriptures, but even today there are people who are living the Christian life, and we are energized and encouraged by that, and encouraged to join that legacy of faith. And the way we get in this legacy of faith, and as we walk with God, we recognize that there are things that keep us from that walk with God, sins that entangle us and we chop them away, the scriptures say, and these other things of life that hinder us, that bog us down, and we root them out so that we can run a race that God has ordained for us. So after it says the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, that we are placed into this race that we are called to run with perseverance. In other words, getting rid of those things that entangle us, those things that hinder us, so we can live the life God has called us to live. And when I think about the race, my wife and I did that half marathon, I started to understand what it meant to run with endurance. Like, I remember the first time that we ran a mile together, you know, just a mile, and it's like, okay, start to get a feel for what it's like to run a mile. And then the first time we ran a 5K, 3.1 miles, right? And I just remember starting to stretch out our runs and just understanding that it was going to be hard to run 13.1 miles. I can't complete the race if I don't understand it's going to be hard. And I've got to dig in and run. My wife actually got injured, and for about a month before the race, she couldn't run. And then her hip got well, and she ran like two times before the race, and then did the 13.1 miles. It was amazing. But during that stretch, I was lengthening out my runs, and there was a day I had to run 9 miles. And I had mapped out this course in my car, and I knew, like, this is going to be hard. And in fact, I had tried this route earlier, and I'd only gotten about 6 miles in. I had to call my wife. Something was wrong. There was something going on in one of my hips. I was like, something's off. And she actually had to come pick me up because there was just no way to get back, right? And so then it was time. I'm going to do this 9 mile run. So I take off. And I'm running, and I'm a couple miles in, and a friend of mine had given this to me, and I just started referring to it as my system check. So I'm running, I'm a couple miles in. Now, I'm a couple miles out, so no matter what, even if I turn around, I got to run a couple miles, but I want to do this loop. I want to get the 9 miles in, right? I'm not going to stop at 6 this time, and I'm running, and I do this system check. And what I would do is I would just start with my feet, and I would just ask myself, are my feet okay? How am I doing? And I'd be like, oh, my feet are fine. Like, they're comfortable. I had good running shoes. I'm okay. And then I just work my way up. Like, what about my knees? How are my knees right now? Because that pounding on the pavement with your knees and your hips, and I'm running, I'm like, hey, my knees are okay. They're fine. They're not hurting. They're good. What about my hips? And I had discovered that with my stride, like, there was a right stride that really took the burden off of the pain that my hips would feel. And I was like, okay, I'm in the right stride. My hips are okay. I'm doing fine. I'd like check my lungs. How are my lungs? I'm like, I'm breathing. That's a plus. All right. So I'm like, okay, I'm breathing. And I realized that the only problem I had when I was running was all up here. That my body was fine. It was all up here that I needed to run with endurance. My body could handle the 9 miles. My brain couldn't. And you ever talk to yourself? You ever have like really good conversations with yourself? You ever argue with yourself? Oh man, I was arguing with myself. I'm like, you know, and I'm like, I just want to go back. And I'm just like, come on. And I just kept going, but I'm like, yeah, I'm actually fine. I can do this. And as we were coming back, I actually mapped the course, and I went the way that I went for one very important reason. Is about mile 8. There was a half mile of downhill. And then the last three quarters of the mile were back uphill. And I was determined to finish on the uphill portion of the race. Now, little did we know in our actual race, the first 6 miles were all downhill and the return, or the first 6.5 were all downhill. The return was all uphill. I had no idea how much I was preparing myself. That last three quarters of a mile was all uphill. And I was digging in, man. I was screaming at the pavement. You know, I'm just going. And I was learning what it meant to run with endurance. And I want to tell you, that's the Christian life. It's about what we know about God and how we respond to Him. It's about our head and our heart. That God has said, I've put you on a course to run a race. And intellectually, we have to believe and understand that. And then we, in our heart, we have to believe and follow Him. Even when it's hard, we run with endurance. When we were out west in Salem, Oregon, where I grew up, we used to work out at the YMCA. And it was an old YMCA. It was great. I loved going out there. We were the youngest people by a couple decades, and we were in our 20s, and it was wonderful. But what I learned about working out at the YMCA, this is probably the best workout tip I can give you, is about 80% of your workout is talking to other people who are working out, and it's wonderful. So I would just walk around and talk to people who were working out, and I was like, this is great. I love working out. It's so much fun. My wife gets done. She's like sweating. She's like, oh, did you have a good workout? I was like, yeah, man. It was amazing. But one of the guys I like to talk to is a guy named Randy, and Randy was always running on the treadmill. And I'd go talk to him, and he wouldn't stop running on the treadmill. He'd just keep running on the treadmill. And I'd just talk to him, and I'd just stand there and talk to him. I'd help get him through a few miles. I'm kind of that guy, you know, I'm just an encourager. So he and I would talk, and he's always running. And one day I asked him, I go, Randy, how many miles do you run a day on the treadmill? And he's like, oh, usually 15. I'm like, oh, that's dumb. But he did. He just loved running. That was his thing, and he looked like a runner, and he ran. And so one day we were talking, and it came up, and he's like, hey, I'm training for an ultra marathon. He goes, I want to run 100 miles. And I'm like, at once or in your lifetime? Like, I'm thinking that would be a lifetime goal for me. You know, 100 miles, like, woo. But he's like, no, I want to do that. It'll take me like all night. I'll finish like in the middle of the night or early in the morning the next day. And I'm like, Randy, that sounds horrible. But this is what he wanted to do. So he was training and training and training. And I remember the week of his training, he came in on Monday and he did kind of a short run for him. He has only 12 miles, loser. And then he left it up. And then like on Thursday, Friday, he just came in and just stayed loose, and then Saturday was the day of his run, and so he went out to run his 100 miles. And Monday he wasn't at the gym, and we just figured he was recovering. And Tuesday he was there, and he's running on the treadmill. And I went over, I go, Randy, how was it? And this literally the first time I ever saw him do this. He stopped the treadmill, and he said, I stopped at mile 81, and like tears welled up in his eyes. He goes, I regret so deeply that I stopped. And I'm thinking, dude, you just ran 81 miles, right? Like in a day, okay? And he told me this. He said, I was running. There was no one else around me for about 20 miles. It was the middle of the night. And my head just started to tell me I'm on the wrong trail. I got off somehow. There was nobody around. It was, you know, it's dark. It's just, there's nothing. It's just him and the pavement. And he said, after a few miles of that, he goes, I couldn't keep going. I convinced myself I was off the path. And there he was. And a few months later, he was training again. And we moved shortly after. So I don't even know if he ever finished his 100 mile. I suspect he did. But when we run with endurance, it sometimes means we go through dark nights. We go through hills. We go through valleys. We walk near the valley of the shadow of death. But we run with endurance because we know the God who has put us on the course. And I want to teach you a little bit about Him this morning. Turn to Psalm 139, please. Psalm 139. I'm going to give you four things that all start with the letter D. Four things. If you're taking notes or if you write in your Bible, these might be four words to write in your Bible to remember how much God's engaged with our lives, how much we can trust Him with the trail that He has given us. Psalm 139, verse 1, you have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways before a word is on my tongue. You, Lord, know it completely. The first thing I want you to know is God knows every detail of your life, and He still loves you unconditionally. God knows every detail of your life. And I love what the psalmist does here is he talks about the most mundane details of life. He talks about every time I go out, every time I stand up, every time I sit down, God knows. Now, my wife and I have been married 25 years. There's not a human being I love on the planet more than I love my wife. But I'm just going to confess something right now. Except for one day. My wife's a kidney donor. She's an extraordinary woman. She had three kidneys. She had two. And now she has one. When she donated a kidney, this was the only day I ever, in our 25 years, kept track of how many times she stood up or sat down. And that was because she was required to stand up at one point and sit back down. I think she did it twice that day. And I kept track. That is the only time I have ever kept track of how many times my wife has stood up or sat down in a day. Yeah, 25 years. I know, I'm a jerk, right? Who cares about how many times you stand up or sit down in a day, right? God does. In fact, a few years ago, I told you we were in South Africa. We took our whole family. It was an unbelievable experience. And I'm preaching to a group of students from five distinct people groups in this part of the world that has been torn apart by racism. And it was one of the coolest things. And we're working through Psalm 139 during that week of camp. And I was talking about this. And one young boy came up to me after my chapel that evening. He said, "Hey, tomorrow I'm going to keep track of how many times I stand up and sit down." I'm like, "That's a dumb idea, kid, but have fun, okay?" He's like, "I'm going to keep track." And I gave him a Sharpie. And he's going to take the Sharpie and he's going to put a little mark on his arm every time he stood up and every time he sat down. Now, even right now, if you tried to think about how many times you've stood up and sat down today, it's a lot, right? Like this morning, you know, probably one of your leaders woke you up and said, "Hey, it's time to get up." And you got up and then they left the room and you went back down, didn't you? You're just like, yeah. It's like hitting your snooze. Your leader is like, the first time they come in, that's like when you hit the snooze because you know they'll be back in 5 minutes to tell you again, right? So then they come back in the second time, like, "Hey, get up." You're like, "Oh, okay." And you get up, right? And then you start looking around for your shoes because cabins at night, it's weird. Cabins just like shake and you don't know it, but everyone's stuff goes everywhere, right? And so then you're looking for your shoes and you're like, "Oh," and you're putting one on, like, "That's not my shoe." And you sit back down again and get your shoe and then you get ready and then you get up and you're trying to get ready, you go into the bathroom, right? And you sit down and then you get back up, and then you're just going around all your business, right? And then you go to breakfast and you're standing in line to get hot chocolate and the line's too long, so you go back and sit down and wait for it to get shorter. And then you get back up and you go get your hot chocolate and then you sit back down and then they dismiss your table to go get food and you get up and you get your food and you go and you sit back down and then you realize you forgot the milk and then you get up and you go get it and you sit back down and your friend's like, "Have something," like, "Where'd you get that?" And they're like, "Oh, it's over there." And like, "Ah." So you get up again, right? I mean, it's breakfast and you've been up and down 30 times already. That's what this kid discovered. He's putting marks on his arm every time he stood up and sat down. He comes to me at lunch. Okay, he started when he woke up that morning. Comes to me at lunch, hands me the Sharpie. He has 130 some marks on his arm. Okay? And he's like, "I'm done keeping track." He was a skinny little kid too. He didn't have much space. He's just like, my guess is his Sharpie. It's probably still there. You can probably still see the marks today, right? Think how stupid it is to keep track of how many times you stand up and sit down, unless you have a medical reason. Think how stupid that is, right? It's not stupid to God. And if God cares about how many times you stand up and sit down, how much more does He care about the things that are in your heart and in your mind? How much does He care about what's happening in your family? How much does He care about what's happening at your school? What's happening in your relationships? The point the psalmist is making is if God cares about the tiny little details, think how much He cares about the big details. God knows every detail of your life. And He says, "I love you anyway." You see, we hide details from people because we're afraid if they know this about us, they're going to think something about us. They're not going to like us as much. They're going to distance themselves from us. God says, "I know all those details and I love you." That's the first thing I want you to know about this God who has designed a trail for us to run. Jump down with me to verse 7. "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you are there. Well, if I rise up on the wings of the dawn and I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light becomes night around me, even darkness isn't dark to you. And the night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. The second thing I want you to know is there's no distance you can travel from God, physically or spiritually. You can never escape God's presence. I think the psalmist does two things for us. One, he talks about this. He's very poetic. Like, if I could go as far away as possible from where I am now, even there, you would be there. Like, I physically can't get away from you. If you became an astronaut, you went to the moon, and you're on the moon, and you're the only human on the moon, God would be with you on the moon. I actually have a friend that is working. He's in Houston. He works with NASA. He's actually trying to figure out how to get a human on Mars. That's his job. Right? Like, they are literally trying to figure out how they're going to get a human on Mars. And if we ever get a human on Mars, you know who that human's going to be with all by themselves? God. Because you cannot escape God. There's no place in the galaxy, there's no place in the universe that you could travel and be away from God. But then he does something else. He says, if I shroud myself in darkness, and I don't think he's talking about the absence of light. I think he's talking about if I lived as the most wicked person imaginable. If I tried to just be a horrible human being and I just lived with all the wickedness in my heart expressed, he says, even then you would know where I was. Even then you would be right there with me. Because you cannot travel any distance physically or spiritually and get away from God. You cannot escape God. And he knows every detail of your life, and he loves you. And he knows when you've tried to run from him. He knows when something's been done to you and you think, no God could ever love me if they knew this. And you think there's some distance, some darkness that can hide you. And God says, nothing can hide you from my presence. That's the God in Hebrews 12 who has mapped out a course for your life. That's the God that you can trust. Because he knows every detail and he loves you. He knows the distance you've tried to travel away from him and he loves you. And I want you to see the next thing in verse 13. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. The next thing you need to know is God's love for you is so grand that he was involved in every part of your design. Every part of your design, God was involved in. The psalmist uses the knitting picture. Knitting is this beautiful thing. In fact, my grandma used to knit. And what she would knit, like one year in particular, she'd knit out of old gym socks. Now, that's a term that isn't really that familiar anymore. But back in the day, we had gym socks. And those of you who are over 30 probably remember gym socks that came up to your knees. They were white, really long, and they had colors on the top. Yeah, you're like going, that's nasty. Yeah, it really wasn't cool back then either, but we did it. I don't know why. We had short shorts and long socks. It was all backwards. But these gym socks would come up to your knees. How many of you remember those? Yeah, and they were really good. They had really color. You remember those? Wow. So they had these colored bands at the top. And what my grandma would do is she'd kind of take these apart and she would knit them into these like little rugs that she gave to each of her grandchildren. I was 9 years old, I think, 8 or 9, and I got it as a Christmas gift. And you know, sometimes you have to be excited about a gift that you're not excited about. Like your mom and dad are looking at you like, you know, raise the happy level. And you're just like, oh, grandma, go give her a kiss. I'm like, what the heck, right? So not only were those gym socks kind of weird, and so the rug was kind of weird, but they weren't soft. They were actually made out of sandpaper. A lot of people don't know that. They were like colorful sandpaper. So you got these gym socks that are now a rug. It is not a comfortable rug. When you woke up in the morning, like we had to all put them by our beds so the grandma would come over and visit and see them on the floor by our beds, like we're using them. It was better to put your feet on the cold floor than it was on the rug. It was really that bad. And I deeply regret, yeah, I'm 47 now, so this is almost 40 years ago. I deeply regret that I didn't understand the value of that gift. Because it wasn't about the quality of the rug. It was that, just like Hannah's up here knitting this beautiful blanket, I think. Blanket? Am I? Yeah, good. Beautiful blanket. That looks a lot like the gym socks, white with stripes. I like it. I'm sure it's more pleasant to touch. Yeah, okay. Yeah, not a criticism. But like, just as she's up here knitting this, you don't knit in mass production. She can't knit four blankets at the same time. Now, she might have four projects she's working on, but she has to put one down to pick up the other, right? That's the picture the psalmist uses here to describe God being involved in your design. There wasn't a mass production, right? God didn't design John over here. He didn't design him and go, you know what? This is a great, great mold. Man, I want to make a whole bunch of these. He's just like, yeah, right? That's not how it worked. God was intimately involved in Jack's design. And when he was done, he's like, this is a beautiful work of art. Think about that. And the psalmist says, inside and out. In other words, God was involved in your personality too. Isn't that kind of crazy? Okay, don't look at anyone, don't point at anybody, but anybody here ever been annoyed by somebody else? Anybody here? Stop looking and pointing, okay? Man, you're rule breakers, all of you. Like, we all are, right? There's people, there's personality types that just annoy us, right? So in our family, we have this kind of funny thing. We talk about exactitude. So my wife has a very precise sense of things, and she's passed on to my son. My wife is a justice person. She likes things to be right. Okay. And I'm more of a like, I'll be okay person. And sometimes that creates conflict, and we call it an exactitude. Like when you have to be like very precise, just like, oh, I see your exactitude's coming out. And we kind of joke with each other about that. Right. But like, yeah, if you've ever met somebody who's like always, they correct you every time you mispronounce something, right? Like if you spell Tatum like a normal human, they like freak out. Just kidding. No, right? Like if you're around someone like that, and it's like, oh, right? Or maybe you're a person who doesn't like when people are imprecise, you know, like, I don't think that's right, right? And it just frustrates you. We all have people that irritate us. And good news, you irritate someone else, okay? It goes both ways, right? Think about this. Imagine if we began to believe what Psalm 139 says, and that it's God at the heart of the design of every human being inside and out. Imagine if you looked at yourself in the mirror in the morning and you believed Psalm 139 verse 13 that says, God knit you together, and that God has designed a path for you in life. That God says, run this path with perseverance because I know you. And what I've put before you, I've put before you because I know you. God isn't asking you to run my journey. He's not asking me to run yours. He wants you to run yours with perseverance and trust that the God who put you on this path knows exactly what he's doing because he knows you better than you will ever know yourself. He knows every detail. He knows the distance you've traveled from him. He's involved in your design. And this last one is really beautiful here in verse 17. How precious to me, or I think a better translation is, how precious about me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. And when I awake, I'm still with you. This is such a beautiful picture. We were at the coast one time, and I was thinking about this as we were by the ocean. And I was thinking about what it would be like to count the grains of sand. And so I had a great idea. I was like, I'm just going to grab a little handful of sand. I'm going to see if I can figure out how many grains of sand are in a handful. So I grabbed a handful of sand and I started to count, and I realized very quickly I was never going to know how many grains of sand were in a handful of sand. So I dumped it and I did this. And I was like, I'm just going to do a pinch of sand. And then maybe I can figure out how many pinches are in a handful, right? Doesn't that seem smart? Yeah, that seems smart. No, it doesn't. Thank you. Thank you for being wise. So I reached in and I grabbed a pinch and I turned my hand over, and whatever was on my fingerprint, the tip of my finger, I began to count. And I literally got to like 30 or 40 grains, and I realized there were thousands of grains of sand on the tip of my finger. I was like, I am not going to be able to count this, right? And that's what the psalmist says. He says, if I were to try to measure how much God thinks about you, thinks about me, thinks about his creation. It would take all the grains of sand on the seashore to tabulate. Think about that. And here's the picture, right? At the end of verse 18, the psalmist says, "And when I wake up, I am still with you." In other words, when I wake up, you are still present here. In other words, all day, these thoughts God has about his creation, it's like pulling the grains of sand, and it's like moving them all from here to here. And at the end of the day, you go to bed and God's thoughts continue. When you wake up, he starts over again. That's how much God cares about his creation. That it's the grains of sand on the seashore. That's the only comparison the psalmist could come up with. That's how much God is thinking about you and thinking about me. And that God says, run your race. That God who thinks about you, who knows every detail, who knows the distance you've traveled, knows your design, that God is thinking about you. And the conclusion is always the same. The last D is the word deliberate. God deliberates all these thoughts he has. He deliberates. Deliberation is a legal term. And what happens in a court case is all the data's come in, all the evidence is in, and the lawyers are done. And the judge turns to the foreman of the jury and he says, "All right, you have all the evidence. Now go deliberate. Take all the evidence, all the data, go deliberate. And when you come back, have a verdict." Right? And God deliberates all those grains of sand. There's all the thoughts about you, all the details, the distance, the design. And he moves in over 24-hour period. He's thought about you. And when you wake up in the morning, God says, "I have my verdict about you. Jack, I have my verdict about you. I have my verdict about every one of you. Tatum, I have my verdict about you," says God. He says, "My verdict is I love you. I have all the data. I have every detail of your life. I have all the times you thought you could put distance between us. I know your design inside and out. And I have pondered it so much. Every thought is like one of the grains of sand to the seashore. And I've emptied the seashore of thoughts. And now I have a conclusion. And my conclusion is, I love you. Let's start this day together." And that God says, run with perseverance the race that he's marked out for us. And you see, it's a head and a heart problem, because we have to believe what the scriptures say about God, that he cares about us, that he's engaged with us, that he's real, that he's here, that he's present in our lives. We have to believe that. And in faith, we have to trust that no matter what happens, his love for us hasn't changed. It's not a body issue. You know, we did that check down and we realized it's a heart issue and it's a mind issue. Well, I believe. And will I trust that God with my life? Because the best life you will ever have is not the one you will make for yourself. It is the one that God will give you when you trust him with every single step. And so we cut away the sin that entangles. And we remove the things that hinder. And we dig in and we follow a God who loves us unconditionally, who knows every detail, who knows the distance, who knows our design inside and out. And in his thoughts, he deliberates and comes back with the same conclusion every morning. I love you. Will you follow him on the path he has given? God, thank you for Psalm 139. It's one of my favorites in this book. You know how many times I've come back to it in my own life. How many times I've reflected on it, Lord, and just been grateful that for reasons I'll never understand, you look at me and you think and you process, and at the end of the day, your conclusion is the same. God, I that is too wonderful for me to fathom. But I believe it, Lord. I believe it with my mind, and I want to follow you with my heart. And my prayer is that these students will believe in their minds what the scriptures say, and they'll follow you with their hearts on the journey that you have mapped out. Lord, that we would run with perseverance because of our faith and our commitment to you, a God that knows it all and whose perspective never changes about his creation. God, may we pursue you unrelentingly, Lord, with perseverance, so that you get the glory for how we live. In the name of your Son, Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Joe Castaneda, Psalm 139. You've been listening to Building Blocks for the Family from the Bible Broadcasting Network, helping you build a strong family to the glory of God.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.